First, we're going to be talking about the art of cartooning. Vision-impaired author and illustrator Richard Fairgrey's a creator of comics and picture books. He's been making his own books since childhood. Growing up in Auckland, the award-winning comic book and picture book author now spends his time in North America between Canada and LA. His books for children have been published internationally in Australia, the United States, and with foreign language editions published in Korea and Turkey. His titles are many, including the comic series Blastosaurus and Ghost Ghost, and multiple picture books, including My Grandpa is a Dinosaur. Richard Fairgrey's latest book has perhaps been inspired by some of the North Island's West Coast beaches. It's called Black Sand Beach, Are You Afraid of the Light? Richard is with us now. Good morning and welcome.
Hi, nice to be here. Not here, I guess, very far away.
Well, we're here the way things are these days, isn't it? It's lovely in some ways to hear the revival of voice as a form of communication. Richard, welcome. And such a diverse oeuvre that you have already. Perhaps before we come to the new book, can we talk about the series, the range of work you've done, and particularly some of the comic series, just to introduce our listeners who may not be familiar. Is there a thread through them, and what will set you off intensely into a new project?
There are many threads through them, but it's mostly an obsession at this point. And I guess at all points, it's always just been an obsession that I can't not be making books. I've always wanted to be a ghost. That's really my biggest goal. And so I've been obsessed with ghosts since I was a kid. So there's a lot of ghost stories in my work, I think. The first book I ever wrote, actually, I just learned to write, and I wasn't very good at it yet. I was three, and I wrote a book where Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck were meant to meet to go to a haunted house together, and Mickey doesn't show up. So Donald goes into the house and meets the ghost, who's lonely and has no friends. And so Donald shoots himself in the face so he can stay there forever and be friends with the ghost. And that got me in like a lot of trouble with my kindergarten teacher, Janet, who was a lovely lady most of the time. But it was really exciting because I'd made a thing and I'd written a story, and then I'd gotten in trouble for the story. And it was like that. Not getting in trouble, I guess, but just the idea that it had like had an impact on someone in some way was a really nice feeling. And so I just kind of kept doing it ever since then. I started publishing when I was seven. And I mean, when I say publishing, I mean self-published photocopied books. But Ghost Ghost ran for two issues back then, and then another nine when I was an adult, because I found the original. The actual original art had all been peed on by a cat and left in a school backpack under the stairs at my mother's house, so it wasn't in like great shape. So I redrew it, and then it became like my highest selling book, which was sort of upsetting because I'd written it when I was seven.
You've never not been a published author. I don't think we've only started on one strand, but let's pursue it. I don't think I've ever interviewed someone who said, I've always wanted to be a ghost. And isn't that we love ghosts when we're kids, but we're often sort of terrified of them. They're the things that are supposed to spook us. You empathise. In fact, you so empathise with the ghost that your character did a personal violence to himself in order to be able to be friends with the ghost.
I didn't grasp the magnitude of what I had a beloved Disney duck do. At the time.
These days that have got a psychologist in for you, Richard. I think they might have done that to me as a kid as well. So you've always been writing, always been publishing. I am really intrigued, though, that what you wrote at seven, you were able to, you know, get rid of the cat pee and publish and have it be popular as an adult. And what did you learn from that?
Well, it was I kept making comics, and I started like making a living from it. In that kind of, I was like at art school and making enough money to get by doing comics. I didn't think it would be like a full time career type thing ever. And then when I finished that, I trained to be a high school teacher because I thought that was like the easiest option. And then I realized that I would make less money doing that than I was making from comic books in my spare time. So I started like really trying to take it seriously. And I'd had this idea for years. I'd done like a bunch of like graphic novels and things. I had a book called Falling Leaves, which a lot of people liked. And I had a book called Wilhelm Scream, which was kind of going to be my big like final book for a long time. And then in Wilhelm Scream, there were all of these fake ads for different products. And one of them was for a kids' TV show about a crime-fighting dinosaur that I'd made up. And that was all it was. And then I was dating this guy who I met online, and he was living in Australia at the time, and working on a film. And he showed some of my books to some of the producers. And then I got a call saying, will you come to Australia and meet with the people at Fox to pitch some stuff? And I thought, well, this is probably the only like shot I'm going to get to do this. Like, and it's, you know, it's just happened by chance. And like, yes, there's luck involved, but it was also my 100th book that he'd shown them. So there's, you know, there's just the numbers game. And so I turned Blastosaurus into this like 15-page sample and took it with me like a week later. And I moved to Australia and that all went horribly wrong. But the book, like, it got optioned. Another book of mine got optioned by the same people. There was all of this like hype around the fact that I was going to like go and make movies and live in Hollywood, which I'd never said I was going to do. But the guy who ran the company did tell the New Zealand Herald that that was going to happen. So then I got a really angry call from my grandmother for leaving the country without telling her. But it was kind of like the first sign that like, oh, this could really work. And so I started publishing at like a much higher level in New Zealand, like really doing all the conventions and really like upping the production values and like putting my full time into it. And then Blastosaurus had been going for a couple of years and it was doing really well. And then I found this old Ghost book and I thought, oh, I should just make a little, like I could redraw this in a day and I can just, let's do a print run of like 1,000 copies and take it to a convention and see what happens. And it was a little book, so it was like $2. And it sold like crazy. And I think by the time I left New Zealand, which was like 4 years later, we had 10 issues of Ghost out. And I think the first one, we'd gone through like 40,000 copies at that point. And it was like this thing that took a day to make that I wrote when I was seven was like the thing that I just knew would just gonna keep going forever. And I was like, that's because it always comes back to ghosts every single time. And so now with Black Sand Beach, like I get to write a story about a haunted lighthouse and like bring in some real ghosts that I've seen and like have a lot of characters who are really delighted to see ghosts in the same way that I was.
Some real ghosts that I've seen? Are you being literal there?
Yeah, of course.
Tell me more.
Well, there's the lighthouse in the book and the beach itself is based on the beach, the Potu Beach, the Potu Peninsula, Kuiper Harbor, up sort of you leave Dargaville and you head into the middle of nowhere and you arrive at a scary lighthouse. It didn't work very well because it's like the oldest lighthouse in the country, and so there was always like a lot of spooky ghost activity, and we used to spend all our summers there because my dad and my aunt had built a house up on poles at the beach there. It was up on poles because there were cattle stampedes and you had to allow the cattle to come through under the house. And so there's actually a story sort of based on that where it's definitely not a cow that they find trapped in one of their hammocks the next morning. Loosely again, based on us finding an actual baby cow trapped in a hammock one morning, which is a weird thing to wake up to when you're a kid. Like it's a screaming that you'll never forget. that's my New Zealand remake of Silence of the Lambs right there. So it's based on that, and then in a new book I'm doing later in the series, I don't want to give away too much, but my friend Jim, who I wrote a book with a few years ago called Open in Case of Emergency, he used to live in a haunted post office, or ghost office as I like to call it, and the three times I've stayed there, a woman has appeared to me in my sleep and asked me if I'd like to fly with her. And each time, on the first night, she flies me around the room. The second night, she flies me down the stairs. And then she always says on the third night, we'll fly out the door. But she always says that she knows no one ever wants to fly out the door with her. And I thought this was just a dream I kept having. And then I met someone who used to live in the house, and he was like, oh, have you met the woman in the upstairs bedroom? Make sure you don't fly out the front door with her. A lot of people have died in that house by doing that. And it turns out that, yeah, like a lot of people had died in that house mysteriously and were just found like outside the front of the house dead in the morning. So that was cool. I'm really glad I never stayed there three nights in a row, because I definitely would have gone with her. How do you say no?
I'm having a moment where I'm thinking we all believed in ghosts when we were kids. Some of us still have experiences that we are absolutely convinced are paranormal. The rest of us come up with logical reasons for those experiences, or think that we get into a psychological state where we just, invent them. And for you, like, genuinely and not as part of your creative process and persona, are you convinced?
I'm absolutely convinced. Like, I have seen far too many spooky things in my life for there not to be spooky things going on. I have no idea. Like, I never really want to look too much further into it, though, because I don't want to hear some living person's explanation as to like what this could be. And every time I end up talking about this, there's two possibilities. One, a person wants to absolutely insist to me that ghosts don't exist. And I think, what a miserable life to wake up every day with absolute certainty you're not going to become friends with a ghost. Like, what an awful, awful life that person must have. And then the other possibility is someone who's like super duper into ghosts, who wants to talk to me about like spectral energies and like what kind of meaning there is. I'm like, that's also boring, though. Can we not just get like spooked out, or like go talk to a ghost and hang for a bit?
Yeah, I'm happy to stay there. You mentioned, because we've talked a lot about the storytelling and the story writing, but of course a huge part of this, the illustrations. You mentioned that you went through art school, which suggests, first of all, a modicum of talent. In fact, more than that, because I think it was ELAM. And when it comes to developing your style, though, is, again, it's the old argument, nature and nurture. Like, have you had clear influences who inform your style? Have you played around with different ways of doing things? Or a little bit like the stories, has much of it always just seemed to be there, ready to be polished?
I think that a lot of the time, you can see influences in my work. Like, you can, in my children's books, you can see that I grew up having a lot of Morris Sendak books read to me. And you can see, like, the presence of these strange worlds from things like Naughty and Big Ears and those gnome books that everyone had a few of and wanted all of because the spine's connected. But I think the thing about being a comic book artist is, like, you have to make everything up from nothing. Like, yes, there are some comic book artists who use reference and things, but, like, in general, you are inventing an entire world, and you are inventing the look of every building and every tree, and you have to know how to use probably one or two pens. And I know there are people who use lots of pens, but let's be real. Most of us use like one or two pens and pretend we're fancy. You have to know how to make that pen recreate every single possible texture in the universe and every single possible shape of leaf. And you have to know how to do that really fast, and your brain has to just switch into it. Like, I was thinking about this the other day because I'm drawing a lot of stuff set in the forest at the moment, and I have to make sure that there's different textures of bark on lots of different trees, because not all the same trees grow next to each other, and different leaf shapes and different angles of branches. And I just have to kind of do that without thinking. And I think, like, what it comes from is constantly looking at the real world and then figuring out what you want the real world to look like. I think a lot of my style is very dictated by the fact that I only see in two dimensions. I only have one working eye, and even then it only works like a tiny little bit. And so my way of making sense of the world as a kid was to draw it, because I could turn 3D things into flat things. And so a lot of the time, like, the weirdness of the shapes I use and the perspectives I use are me trying to still figure out, oh, I wonder what that does look like to other people.
And this vision impairment, this particular vision impairment, we should say, I think this is since birth. So this isn't a case of having started with a full sense of sight and then recalling it. This has been an interpretation that has been lifelong.
Yeah, they actually thought I was totally blind when I was born. And my mother tells this story with great delight that the first time I started reacting to lights and like shielding my eyes from lights was at a funeral when I was like 3 weeks old. And everyone, my whole family got so excited that I was seeing things that they all started cheering at the funeral.
Oh, no.
I don't know whose funeral it was.
But you're terribly sorry. What is your working... you obviously start a series. You've obviously got, I presume, a starting point, some sort of a plan for that series. I don't know how much you work to plan. But do you become utterly immersed?
Completely. Yeah. Like, this is... It absolutely becomes an obsession once I'm in the mindset of it. And like Black Sand Beach, I'd kind of toyed around with telling the story of the haunted lighthouse for years and never really found a way to do it. And then I was Blastosaurus was on hiatus. I was on my honeymoon in New York, and I got a call from an old editor who said that she was with a new company and they were looking for series and if I had anything to come in. And I didn't, so I went in and just kind of made it up and pretended like I've been doing it for about 18 months. And then that night, and what was, I think, a very romantic move, I sat at a very nice restaurant with my husband, ignoring him and drawing pictures of these characters. And I, like, we found, like, an all-night photocopy place and got the pictures scanned, and I sent it to that publisher. And, like, the next morning, they had an offer for me. And they were like, but you can get this done real fast, right? I was like, yeah, of course, because I've been working on it for so long. And then I'd said to them that I wanted to do three 64-page stories. And they came back and offered me a deal, which was for two books. And like, I looked at the basic details. I'm going to be honest, I did not read the contract. And I'm going to be extra honest, I never have read a contract and probably never will. But I read the basic points at the beginning that said they met my page rate and that they wanted two books. And I was disappointed because I wanted to do three because that would kind of keep me going for like a full year and that'd be kind of nice. I wouldn't have to worry about anything else. And I was going to start it January 1st and it was due April 1st. And on January 3rd, I was sending in some script stuff to the editor. And she said, are you sure you can get this done in time? I was like, yeah, I'm pretty fast. Like it's 64 pages in 3 months. It's easy. And she said, Richard, it's 192 pages. Each book has three 64-page stories. And I was like, oh, okay, well, my life is going to be real different for a second. And I moved into my office full time, had all my food and water delivered because you cannot drink the tap water in LA. And I bought 20,000 adult premium body wipes from a discount website. I should have paid more than $15 for them because the ones I got gave me some pretty bad chemical burns. So the result was my whole plan was I won't have to go home to shower if I have these, but instead I was just sore and stinky.
Oh, Lord.
And it was, but like the thing is, like I ate nothing but microwavable food or like some takeout, and I drew all of the time and like did nothing else, thought about nothing else. And we weren't technically allowed to live in the office building, so I had to hide from security. And it's at a complex that actually has a haunted lighthouse in it, so that was kind of cool. And there's this big, like, globe on a stick that glows red at night, and that was shining right in my windows, so it was all, like, red and creepy. And at about 2 a.m., the cops come through, and they sweep all the homeless people off Hollywood Boulevard, and they all come south at sunset, which is where I am. And that's the point where if they see your light on, they will try and climb in. And we have a big steel gate downstairs, so it's safe and stuff. But, like, you're hearing a lot of, like, loud screaming and banging on this big steel gate and people trying to climb up to your window. And, like, it was the most fun I've ever had in my life. Like, it was 6 weeks of this, and it was absolute heaven. Like, it was like being at the best slumber party ever, except I never had to worry about whether other people were going to be asleep.
Everything.
I just got to, like, be a crazy person.
Everything is art, Richard. Everything is art. Wonderful. Lovely to talk. Richard Fairgray, the latest is Black Sand Beach, Are You Afraid of the Light? Auckland born and raised, but now, as you can hear, making mayhem in Canada and in Los Angeles.